A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
A Mochi moment from Sadie, who writes, "I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy." Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
A Mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate it. If you haven't rated the show already, we would appreciate a 5-star rating if you think we've earned it. Give Lindsay one too while you're at it over there at Rogue Ways. You can, if you want to connect with me, website macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. I really appreciate our sponsors. I have great sponsors. They make products or have services that actually do what they're supposed to do. Chemical Free Body is part of that. Tim James has been with me since the beginning. He offers supplements for your health that actually work. Imagine that. And if you find something over there, you can use the discount code macro and save yourself some money on things like the detox bundle, which is Green 85 and 4 different capsules, gut detox, toxin detox, ultra enzymes, and probiotics. Put you on a 90-day program, lean you out quite a bit. I've done it twice. You'll have to buy new clothes afterwards. I'm just warning you in advance. Or maybe you're interested in the Pat Miletich Super Soldier formula. It's over there too. So take a look at chemicalfreebody.com. If you find something on your way out, the code is macro. Also, big thanks to Legal Shield that have been doing this. They've got a lot of practice. They've been doing this for 50 years in the United States and in Canada, and they'll get you access to an attorney in your area for a very, very reasonable price. How's a dollar a day? $30 a month will get you an attorney that can handle all kinds of things for you. Do you have a financial power of attorney, a medical directive? Do you have a last will and testament? You need those things. You really need those things. You don't want to not have those things at a time when everything falls apart. So maybe consider becoming a member of Legal Shield. And in your first month, use the app on your phone. Tick, tick, tick. I need to knock out these documents. Great. An attorney in your area will call you in 24 hours. You'll get a phone call. Hey, it's Bob down the street at this law firm that you've never heard of before. Come on over and see us on Friday. We'll knock out all these documents. It's real easy. It's just a matter of, are you ready to do it? If you are, go to the website, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. It's a good place to find everything related to Legal Shield and what they've set up for us. There's a lot going on over there, so please check it out. Well, this one is going to be intense and fantastic, and we're probably going to laugh. We might even cry a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, the host of Rogue Ways, the co-host of Day Zero, Lindsay Sharman. Hello, Lindsay.
Hey, Charlie. Yeah, I'm really good at crying, actually.
Oh, good.
I'm really good at getting other people to cry, too, yesterday. I went to go pick up chicken food yesterday, and I was talking to the lady, and I was like, I don't even remember how exactly. I didn't mean to bring it up at all, but I mentioned like our chicken whose feathers are sort of messed up. And she's like, what's going on? And I was like, well, her best friend just died. And she was like, oh, no. And I was like, yeah, it was really sad. And they were clutch mates and they were just like best friends. And then she died. And then all the other chickens had been like sitting around her in a circle the week before she died. Like they knew she was going to die. And as I'm describing this circle of chicken love around the dying chicken, we're both just like starting to tear up. And I'm like, man, I'm sorry.
Like, I just came in here. She's like, I just wanted to come to work and sell you chicken feed. I didn't want to have like an emotional breakdown about my dad left me when I was young. Oh,
for real. You know, like the whole thing. Let's have a therapy session. It's yeah. True, though. It's like, it's what I'm good at. I do tarot readings and all of these things, you know, when people come to this. And I think a lot of times if people know me, they know what to expect. But sometimes people find me and they don't quite know me and they don't have that. And then they show up and they're like crying and they're like, why am I crying? I'm like, this is like a therapy session, actually. It might be tarot. There's lots going on here. But yeah, really, we're getting down into like the depths and the heart of it. And so, yeah, I'm good at crying. I'm good at making people cry.
Well, I didn't want you to come on here and make me cry.
But I'll try not to.
I did think that given the current situation that I'm going through, this would be a good time for us to have this conversation. Now, I'll start off the episode by explaining what's going on in my situation. And I will also say that I have an episode with Ricky Verandas that's coming out after this. And I did this whole disclaimer at the beginning of the Ricky episode as well, thinking that it would predate this one, but it turns out this episode is going to go out before the Ricky one. So I'm going to have to do this again and let everybody know kind of what we're talking about, because I'm not trying to be deceptive or anything. It's just kind of a personal situation. I'm in Las Vegas. I've been here for almost a month now. I came in the last day of August to be with my mother, who has been sick, and it's been getting progressively worse. She had a biopsy done in August, and I came in to town to be with her for the results of the biopsy. The results of the biopsy was stage 4 pancreatic cancer. She was given 90 days to live, which basically puts us right around the election. And that's some real talk from the doctor, right? When they sit you down and tell you that. I had a conversation with the oncologist a couple days later after we went with my mom. He said, what do you want to do? I said, we're not doing chemo. What are our other options? And his response to me was, I will say a prayer for you. Oh. So I took that personally, and I was completely and deeply offended by that. Mm-hmm. Not that he was offering me prayers, but he was so dismissive of it. Because you know what? I'm working on it with a variety of other doctors and substances and formulas that he didn't mention, because he doesn't get paid on that. Because the oncology industry is the one industry of big pharma where you can buy the product at retail, chemotherapy drugs, you can mark it up, or you can buy it at wholesale, mark it up to retail, and keep the difference of profit. So oncology is extremely profitable. They don't want to talk to you about the other things out there. Now, I'm not going to get into what exactly I've been doing with my mom. I might do that at some point in the future. But on top of this, she also had a stomach issue. This cancer's tumor was growing around her pancreas. It was clogging an outflow. I'm not exactly sure how it all works, but it was clogging an exit from the stomach that was allowing her to not allowing her to eat and causing her to throw up bile 50 times a day or until I got here. I will say this, given the non-traditional treatments that I have been trying with her, it took 2 weeks, but we got the throwing up under control. It has gone away. She's now in the hospital getting the bypass, and you and I are talking about this. So I'm not trying to bum everybody out, of course, and I'm not trying to say that we're just, you know, we're giving up on this because some doctor gave me a diagnosis, but we are also realistic. We understand what that means. I am interested in fighting this to the extent that we can. We're both in good spirits. I got to get my mom's stomach fixed. If you're going to fight cancer, you don't want to do it with a broken stomach. So given that this is sort of my scenario for the last month plus, and you know, you and I do day zero. So we talk every week, but you know, and you're one of the people that I would want to discuss some of this stuff with because you have a background in this. So I want to get into things like what you work on, and I want to talk about near-death experiences and past lives and reincarnation. And a lot of this stuff is kind of woo-woo to a lot of people because, and also it's tough to think about, you know, you don't really want to talk about this or think about death because it's so heavy. But I've been through this with plenty of people, family members, friends, you know, it's always hard. There is no shortcut to feeling good about this, but I suppose, you know, talking it out and letting everybody know. So that's my disclaimer to the audience. So I'm here, I'm fine. Oh, by the way, she was not vaccinated. In case anyone is curious about that, no vaccinations. In fact, as I was filling out all the paperwork admitting her into the hospital the last couple of days for this bypass, you know, they give you a million forms to fill out and a bunch of it is what prescription medicines are she on? And it's like, you know, it gives you like an entire page to use. And I wrote none, vitamins. And on about three or four different occasions, I had nurses, doctors going through those and they go, is this right? Nope, just vitamins? And I go, yeah. And they go, interesting. Good.
They don't see that.
They all were like, is this correct? Or did you just not want to fill it all out? It's like, no, it's correct. She's not on prescription drugs and she didn't take any vaccines and she knew the vaccines were bullshit from the beginning because she felt like she was injured from a flu vaccine 15 years ago. She didn't feel right after that. She says, I don't think these work. And so she was anti-vax before I was. So for those that are wondering, it's not a situation where it's a fast-acting vaccine-related thing. It's just life, right? So that's where we are, and that's kind of the scenario. And so we'll work it out and get through it. But I want to talk to you because you have a lot of experience with people dealing with this stuff and with going through it. I mean, it's obviously, you know, it's obviously tough for the person that's going through it, but it has a effect of everybody around them too and how they process this.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, as big as death is, there's something in it too that brings us closer to ourselves and to each other and to mm-hmm. the side of life that is woo-woo and very real though, but that we can ignore for our whole lives if we want to. So there's something like positive about it, right? And like you said, there's no shortcut to feeling good about it. And at the same time, there is some depth of life and experience and understanding of ourselves. And I always say like who we actually are and what we're actually here for that comes when death is near. And it's also something I think that reminds us, you know, and this is sort of the Stoic philosophy of memento mori, right? Like remember death, remember that you're going to die. And it sounds depressing to some people, but for me, the more that's been true in my life, the more intensely rich and beautiful life has been, right? Because I know I'm going to die. And it's the only thing I know for sure. And my grandma used to say all the time, none of us is getting out of here alive. You know, and it was funny. It was a funny way of remembering death, but it was true. And then you're like, well, if I'm definitely for sure going to die, what am I all about while I'm here? Right? This is a short time. I actually just today too got this little memo of, you know, Edgar Casey's, one of like the great prophets that people may or may not know about.
I think you mean David Wilcock. Sorry. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Totally kidding.
Well,
Edgar Casey did it was, boy, if he were, if we could have videotaped all his sessions.
Man. Yeah. Well, they have the recording. So they have the transcript. So you can like go through and read all the stuff that came through him. And one of the, just a little snippet that I saw today was just, you know, you're here, he said, on this mundane plane. So this like this earth that's just, for some people it's awful and for some people it's beautiful, and but it's mundane. You're here for just a short snippet of your eternal life, right? And we're not talking about like the eternal life of Christianity where you're going to live in heaven forever. I'm talking about the eternal life of like your indestructible soul that's been born how many times on this earth or elsewhere and will be again how many times, which also sounds horrible to some people, but you know, in my experience, that's the truth. And
yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, this is a good thing for us to remember, right? It's short. And therefore, hopefully we can make it sweet and we can cherish the things about it that are so beautiful.
Well, it's funny because I'm in her apartment and I am the type of person that if I could fit everything I own into a duffel bag, I'd be totally happy with that. She has 83 years of stuff. Wow. And needs to get rid of it. And so I'm going through and I'm getting rid of this and getting rid of that and throwing, you know, and as you do that, you start to realize like, oh, wow, this pair of shoes probably was really important when she bought this pair of shoes. And now they haven't been worn in, I don't know, 30 years. Why are they still here? And so it makes you kind of reevaluate your relationship with money and what you think is important, what you give access to kind of run your life. And this stuff that she's been taking around with her entire life and accumulating and not getting rid of at a rate that's, I'm not trying to say she's going to wind up on A&E in a hoarder's episode or anything like that, but you know what I mean? It's just old lady stuff. I mean, there's a million teapots behind me. You can see, right. You know what I'm talking about. So, so you start to have this, you start to realize like, okay, well, what is important then? I had to have the conversation this morning with her, and it was like, well, at the hospital, I said, I've been doing some spring cleaning. She says, well, don't throw away all these CDs and don't throw away all these DVDs. I said, I threw away the CDs yesterday.
But those are gone already.
I said, those are gone. And I said, but I saved the good ones. Your Eagles' Greatest Hits, I still have. I saved the good ones. But this contemporary compilation of Latin dance music from the 70s, you don't need this. This is going away, right? So having to get honest about what's really important to you in a situation like this can be cathartic, I think, for somebody. You get to this realization of like, oh yeah, you're right. None of this shit matters. Like, oh, I've got $1 million house and nobody cares. You're still going out the same way, right? So how are you going to be remembered? That should be important. How are you perceived as while you're alive, you know, how do people think of you? I think that might be that's more important than really more important than a lot of things. I wouldn't say everything, but you know, the way you feel about yourself, you know, how do you feel about yourself? Are you going to, because I've been on that treadmill where you're going to try and make as much money as you can. And I woke up one day from that sitting in $1 million house in Las Vegas that was empty because everything in my life had fallen apart. And I thought, what the fuck am I killing myself to do this? Yeah. I'm miserable. I was happier when I was in an apartment by myself. I'm not winning. This isn't winning. This is me getting distracted with other things and failing to prioritize what was important. And then it falls apart. And then me going, what happened, dummy? It was like, well, you happened. You put your emphasis on the wrong shit.
Yeah.
And you lost track of it. So
that's exactly the type of stuff, right? And then so when we're close to death, we see this. This is actually the beauty of having like a near-death experience. People come back changed for that exact reason, as they saw, they didn't just see, right? They experienced and knew exactly what real truth and real reality is, and then came back and were like, none of this matters. None of it matters at all. I had an experience, and other people are the ones who told me it was a near-death experience. I did not die, as far as I know, physically, right? I wasn't on an operating table, like no trauma happened to my physical body. But I had an experience like this. And the more I described it and shared it, I actually finally met a person who had had a near-death experience. And their experience was almost exactly the same as mine. And they're like, yeah, this is a near-death experience. And it just wasn't initiated by physical trauma. And that was the effect of it on my life, too. I suddenly, there was no way not to look at every single moment as, what is the value in this moment? And what am I actually here to get out of it or to do? And, you know, and it wasn't like I came back with some directive, like heal the sick and like bring the message of God. Although that just naturally sort of comes out of you the more you're really honest about what you're here for and like what's going on and what you think life is all about. But I just couldn't do anything but that. I had to look at everything in this new light of like, what are we? What are we here for? What are we all doing here? And then I would ask people, what are you doing here? And almost no one could answer me. And I'm like 16 years old at this point. And they're just like, well, I'm here at school. I'm doing like a class or whatever. And I'm like, no, like, what are you here for? And I don't think most 16-year-olds are ready to be asked a question. So it was kind of unfair, right? Yeah. But this is like the new thing in my mind. This is the new thing in my heart that I'm walking around with this awareness. I can't undo it. You know, but we get those brushes when we're people close to us are dying. Even our pets are dying too. Yeah. Like if we have this strong connection with them and we get the same sort of moment, at least of insight of, oh, there's something way bigger than ever. All the stupid stuff that I've been worried about, stressed about, holding on to, trying to go after, something way bigger, way more important that is actually the only thing that matters.
Yeah. You get that perspective check every now and then. We did have a guy on the Union of the Unwanted who was had a near-death experience while he was ice climbing.
Is that Peter Panagore?
Maybe.
That's exactly the guy whose near-death experience is almost exactly like mine.
Oh,
that's so weird.
Where he was given a choice to stay or come back?
Yeah, and he came back through like a swirling tunnel and he saw millions of them and chose a specific one and it was a different timeline than the one he had been on.
I didn't know. I don't know about that one. This is this was a guy... Maybe it might be the same story. I didn't know the guy. I didn't invite him on the show. I think Ricky did.
Yeah.
And his experience was that he froze to death, like while he was hiking or while he was climbing. And there was a guy next to him was like, you're dead. Like you. Okay. So it was the
same guy. That's Peter Panagore. Yeah.
Yeah. And he came and said that, he was just like in tears during this explanation. And he was saying that like, when he came back, it was like, everything's going to be fine. I don't have to worry about death because I saw what it was. And it was like, oh, if that's it, then I don't have to worry about that, you know, and came back. And that sort of frees you up for the rest of your mortal life, right? To go and have experiences and do things that you might not have done because you might have had some sort of, I'm not saying be reckless and jump out of an airplane without a parachute and try and put one on while you're going down, you know, but I'm saying it frees you up to maybe cross some boundaries that you wouldn't have crossed before. Maybe even, you know, depending on how you're wired, like it could be a bad thing too. Like you could say, well, there are no consequences for my actions. I'm just going to go do whatever I want. But I think that when you have a near-death experience, I think you come back humbled.
Yeah.
Humbled. I think that's part of the experience is the humility of it all. So.
Oh, it's overwhelming. And yeah, that was the guy. And I was like, I'm so glad I've told this story to other people because they know then, like I've said this before I met this guy and he describes the exact same. Cause I talked to many people who had near-death experiences, but none of them were like mine actually. But when he describes coming back, and this was the same for me, I actually was with these, you know, what I call guides and allies. And they were like, you can choose any of these. And it was this layer put around the whole planet of swirling little vortices, right? Mm-hmm. And it looked as though you were looking at a tornado from above. You could just see the swirling, but they were side to side packed in. There was millions of them. And they were like, you can choose one. And I was like, what are they? And they were like, these are different like timelines, basically, of your life. These are different ways that Lindsay Brown can go through these lives, right? And so which one do you want? And I was like, how could I possibly choose between millions of versions of my one life and they're all slightly different? How would I know? I can't do that. And I was like, can you help me? And they were like, of course we can. What
give
do
me
you
a good
want?
One then, man.
Yeah. And then
what are my choices? What's
choices
on the menu?
Well, and that's what they said. They said, well, what do you want? And there was an open-ended question, like in life, what do you want? And I said, I just want what's best for myself and everyone else. And I didn't just mean my friends, my families. I meant like all humanity. I want what's best for all of us. That's it. And they were like, that's this one. And then I fell back down that one. And then I came into this timeline at the end of my life. and I saw myself at the moment of my own death. And then I went reverse, and it was literally like going on along a timeline in reverse. I saw the years 2020, 2019, 2018, 2017. I'm zooming back through. And as I'm going, I see like scenes, different scenes of what I later understood was my life. But at the moment, I was just like confused. I was like, there's all these just me in various places and scenarios looking different each time. And then I'm closer and closer. And this is 1996 or so when this happened. And as I get closer and closer to that number on the timeline, I start getting closer to my mom's house as though I'm like actually just flying through like space, you know, and I start seeing her house, which is where I'm sleeping at the time. And then I just zoom into my body and I woke up and was like, that was the craziest dream I've ever had.
Good Lord. How do you go through, like, what is the, how do you process that? That's too much information.
It's too much information. Most of that stuff didn't even really process through for a while. I mean, like I have my diary entry of this exact experience and how crazy it was. And it's multi-pages long, unlike most of my entries. And it's like really, and so it was overwhelming for me, but I also was very confused because I just thought that's the most vivid dream I've ever had. It's the most real seeming dream I've ever had. It's the longest dream. I just told you a tiny snippet at the end of this experience. There's a whole lot more that happened before that. Whoa. It's the longest dream I've ever had. And I just was like, it's a dream though. That's such a weird dream. What does it mean? And so it was like a couple days later that I even first had the thought, like, what if that wasn't a dream? Because it still was so big. And every day I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And nobody cared. Like, nobody cared. They're like, I mean, that's a weird dream, right? Like everyone, you go tell someone your dream. They're like, yeah, whatever. Like, that's kind of weird. So like, nobody cared because why would they? They're just like, yeah, I guess that's a weird dream, whatever. But I'm like, no, it was like so weird. Like, you can't tell people how impactful it is on you, right? So within a few days, I was like, what if it wasn't a dream? And then I started having crazy experiences that were like, basically, yeah, no, it's not a dream. Like, here's this crazy synchronicity. Here's this thing that happened. Here's this next thing. It's a whole story, but the rest of my life was different and changed. And then I know I had contact with what I now just call my guides and allies. And I've never stopped since then because I know they're real. I was with them, right? Like, I've met them.
Right. Of course. Yeah. That's a different trip. I remember there's a scene from DMT, the Spirit Molecule, where they interview Susan Blumenthal, who's a DMT researcher. She's just like she had no experience with this stuff at all. She wasn't somebody that was like twirling in the parking lot at the Dead or anything like that. She just looked like a normal lady, and she's giving this, she's explaining one of the, you know, they went through multiple sessions. It was injected DMT, you know, like IV DMT. And she said that something along the lines of, I've never been more terrified in my life to be ripped out of my body and to be traveling backwards through the universe, through my own DNA. And she talks about this, having this terrifying experience of feeling like she was ripped out of her body, but then coming into this big void where she could see everything. And there's a big circular, almost like a churning whirlpool of energy that she can see. And she said that she realized at that moment that was where souls were being reborn into bodies. And she said, I recognized this place. I had been there. I had been there 1,000 times before. And as soon as I saw it, I went, I know this place. And she said it was, and then she had interactions with beings that said, you know, that were sort of next to her. And she said she was trying to, give them like a light of love, you know, like she was trying to like send them love, but like a light of something, of white light. She said, I was trying to send them white light of like something, but instead it came out as pink light, like pink, like a pink light of love. And they understood kind of what that meant. And they were trying to communicate with me. And as soon as they were trying to communicate with me, she said, I could hear an airplane fly overhead. And I was slipping back into reality. And she said, I got taken back into reality before they were just about to tell me everything. And I'll be damned if that airplane didn't fly over. And I got sort of, you know, and then the blindfold comes up and Rick Strassman's there going, how was it? And she's like, going, ah, it was terrifying. And humbling and sort of calming at the same point. So it's there's a lot going on
in
this universe of ours. And I think we do ourselves a disservice when we pretend like we everything that's in the physical world is the only thing out there. And it's a trick that our minds play on us because it's really the only thing that we can interact with and we see like in our day to day lives. I mean, unless you're, you know, substance aided or maybe meditation aided, you go into some other different, but if it just does our day-to-day conscious lives, there's not a whole lot of interaction with the spirit world because I think that would make us insane. But
I think it's a little too much. Right.
Don't say, oh, you people with your ideas, this is crazy. I mean, you are always booked up for your sessions, right? You don't need any more advertising. You don't need any more advertising for your sessions. You're already full. But that being said, if you guys want to go book a session, go to rogueways.org and get on Lindsay's calendar if you can find a spot and maybe explore some of this. Because, I mean, what are we doing if we're just humans walking around in these meat suits having an experience in this body of ours? Okay, fine. You don't get to, you know, you get randomly thrown into some body with some parents. I won the lottery. I won the parental lottery. You know what I mean? I can't complain about anything. I can't, you know, say, why me? My mother's 83 years old. She'll be 84 in a couple of weeks. We should be so lucky, right? To live to be 84 and be healthy the entire way up until this last part. I can't.
And to love each other and have that bond that you guys have too. Not everybody gets to experience that with their mother.
No, right? Not everybody gets to experience that at all. You have little kids getting blown up in war zones that had nothing to do with anything. They're just bad luck. So I'm extremely appreciative of my situation. I know that I know this comes for everybody, right?
Yeah.
But if you are a good person during your life, if you are not perfect, of course, but if you are good to others and helpful and loving and just an overall good soul, I think you put yourself in a position for good things to happen to you, you know, and whatever goes on after this, you know, if you get thrown into the soul recycling box, I don't know. I don't know how it all works. I wouldn't pretend that I was gifted with this information, but, but I'll tell you what, while I'm here, while I'm stuck on this hellscape called planet Earth, I'm going to try and do some good, you know, and I'm not going to chase money like I did when I was younger, because I don't think that's I don't think that's the best use of my time.
You know better now. You've experienced it. And this is the thing I think we're all here to do, is to prove to ourselves the things that we know. You can't take it from someone else, right? Someone else can't say to you, don't worry about money. That's not important. When you die, you're only going to care about the love. You're like, whatever, I want a mansion. Leave me alone, right?
Love doesn't pay this rent, baby. You know?
Yeah. And then you go get your mansion, and then you experience actually the emptiness or the lack or whatever. Maybe you experience the joy because you really, really needed to experience having a mansion. That's cool too. But you are the one who is teaching yourself, and you are the one who is developing your knowing. You could never, ever take it from someone else. And this is why people will ask me a lot of times. They're like, well, why am I doing this? Why am I going through all of this? And it's like, because you would never believe any other soul who told you this is the truth. You have to know the truth for yourself, right? That's true gnosis, is when you experience it and you know it, and now nothing can take it away from you, right? Like that experience, like, I know now that I'm a soul. I know now that my body isn't the thing. It's cool. It's a really cool tool. I love my body, but it is not the thing that I am, right? It's a thing that I have. And I know that. And no one could ever tell me that before that moment. I would have said, maybe, you know, I don't know. And then now I'm like, oh, I know. And I don't care who else knows it. They'll find out. You know, I get to then live this life where I am no longer worried about death. Like, I'm going to still try to avoid it. I'm not going to like drive into head on traffic or whatever. No. But I'm also like, it doesn't matter when it comes, if it comes, like how it comes, it's not important to me because I already know when I go there, it'll be fantastic, actually. Pretty cool up there. It's a pretty cool place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that it's the unknowing too, of it all. I think that freaks a lot of people out. I'm interested in a trip, you know, I'm interested in what's going on. I like psychedelic trips. I like vacation trips. I like to go out and see what's out there.
Right.
And at some point this will be presented to all of us, right?
Yeah.
This ending. And
it's really just
I'm not
beginning.
I'm not scared of it, really. I mean, I'm more curious than anything. The sort of writer in me, you know, makes me want. But you're right. You talk about going through these experiences and having to have the knowledge yourself, having to know it by feeling it. And I look back on my life and look at the things that I've gone through, that the changes that I've made in the last, I don't know, let's say 20 years. And it's especially 20 years because I'm now back here in Las Vegas, and I came to this town in 2003 and worked here for a long, long time. And I lived right down the street from where my mom is right now. So I'm having like flashbacks to my real estate, my, you know, the booming time of real estate was because I lived right here, and how that was, and how I worked my ass off, and I was so proud of myself for like kicking butt and doing all the things that I needed. And I watched all that get unraveled really fast. And it made me just think like, okay, what is, first of all, it put me on a path to like trying to understand how money actually works. Yeah. And that led me, you know, like the John Perkins book kind of like woke me up to like economic hitman and things like that.
Yeah.
And I started to learn how money works. So I can't complain about anything, because even when I was foolishly chasing money, it led me to a point where I had to make a decision on how I wanted to play out the second half of my life. Do you want to chase money and go work in real estate and take your vaccines and turn on the TV at night and fall asleep with a beer? Or do you want to do something that's important? Do you want to do something that's like actually potentially memorable and valuable to people? And I chose that.
Yeah.
In 2016, I chose that. I couldn't do what I was doing anymore. It was destroying my soul. I wasn't doing anything illegal or anything wrong or anything like that. I just wasn't feeling like I was fulfilled, or I, and again, it came out of a conversation with my mom where I was explaining to her some new conspiracy I had discovered, you know, as I'd come across something, and she was always really interested in that stuff and a good sport about listening to it. And I go through this whole explanation, and she said, "That's great. Well, this is a really interesting thing that you've just discovered, and along with all these other things." But she said, "What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do? It's great that you have the information. What are you going to do with the information? Do you have a plan for it, or are you just interested in it?" And I was like, I don't know. I never really thought about that. And it was an easy question, and it stumped me. I didn't have an answer. Like, what are you going to do with all this information? I was like, damn. It's the first time it ever occurred to me that I was a participant in this. That I had a role in it. And I thought, well, maybe I could, I don't know, maybe I'll just like write a book. So I quietly, silently started writing the Octopus book to see if that was the direction. And that felt real good to me.
Yeah.
And so I went down that path, and she was the first person to read the Octopus. I gave it to her. So she, you know, I gave it to her. I said, "What do you think?" I said, "I've been writing this book in secret." She was like, "What?" I said, "Do you remember that conversation that we had?" The conversation that we had was in California when I was living in California. And then the book was written in Denver. So so it's like a year later. I go, "You remember that conversation we had like 2 years ago?" She was like, "No."
I'm
like, "Well, let me refresh your memory, because this was what it was." And it sent me down this path towards thinking, well, what am I going to do? What are you going to do with it? Well, what am I going to do with it? I don't know. Am I going to make a movie? Am I going to write, do this, do that? So and I said, "Here it is." Boom, the book. And she went, "Oh my God, you weren't kidding." Like, I said, "Well, you said I got, you know, what am I going to do with it?" So I decided to do something. So I think that for, you know, for those of us out there that you can always have a second act in life, yeah. right?
Or third and fourth,
you know,
yeah.
yeah. You, what you're doing now, what you've been doing for a while, if it's in your job or in your personal life, it's like, well, that's what you're doing now. But that doesn't yeah. necessarily mean that that's what you have to do forever. And I'm really glad I pivoted into this because I feel like it's more, oh my God, I got to tell you this because you'll laugh. I did a, back in 2009, I did a natal reading.
Oh right? yeah. For astrology.
For astrology. Yeah. Somebody, it was a friend of a friend and she was like, maybe you're interested in this. You want to go see it? And I was like, yes. I want to go see. Let's do it. So I did this astrology reading with this person, and I brought my notes. I brought two sheets of paper, and I took all these notes and the you know what they said, and then I scanned those notes and saved them on my computer. And I think obviously I looked at them at the time, or maybe the week after. I was kind of like, oh, you know, kind of, and then I forgot about them. Right? I didn't really think much of it. I found those notes. On my computer last year when I was going through it, I was like, oh, whoa, hang on a second. I should check and see what they said. I opened up the notes. First thing on the first page, you will be a writer. That's right. Holy shit. Nothing else was right on it, by the way. Almost nothing else in the astronomy was right. But the first thing on there was dead on. And by the way, this was 2009. I had no interest in writing at all. So, you know, what is it out there? What's going on? I mean, I feel like some people get it and some people are interested in ascending or figuring things out. But I feel like the vast majority of people are just completely content to never know anything about anything, to just yeah. be on this planet, not knowing where they came from, not knowing where they're going, not caring, not examining, not asking any sort of questions, just existing. And I can't imagine doing it. It seems like such a waste to be here and not have questions. I have a million questions about all sorts of things. I don't have enough answers, but I have questions. I can't imagine going through life and not having questions about this place.
Yeah. No, I'm the same. I'm like, I want to know everything. I want to talk about everything. I want to talk to everyone. I want to hear all these different perspectives. Like, I want to get as much information as possible. But you know, what it comes down to is everybody has these, desires. And for most people, they're unconscious. And I'm not even talking about like sexual, whatever. I'm talking about like just regular desires. Like, what is your desire? For most people, it's like, I want to feel like I belong somewhere. And that's about it. I want to feel like I'm like the master of this aspect of my life. And they're very simple things. And so most people are happy with what we might look at and be like, man, they're practically unconscious. Like, are they even alive? Right? They're like the NPC sort of, they have very simple and possibly unconscious desires. And the rest of us who have sort of like ascended maybe a little bit more, it's no judgment. It's just true, right? Yeah. We have developed sort of a partnership with our desires where we're more aware of them. And then we're also more aware that we can direct them and choose them. Yeah. Right. And then we're also aware of the ones that like might be dangerous and that we have to somehow heal or transform because they're going to lead us astray. Mm-hmm. But you can't actually change your desires. Like, you cannot change them. You have to move through them until you again gain that gnosis of, okay, here's where this desire led me. Do I really have that desire anymore? Or do I have a new desire now? Yeah. Right. And so this is also why we can't stop people. We'll see people like speeding towards a cliff and we're like, dude, it's so obvious. Stop doing that or stop dating him or stop buying this thing or whatever it is. And they're just like, you cannot do it for someone else. Yeah. Like, they have to do it themselves. And, you know, this also is a good sort of parallel to like the idea of hitting rock bottom. It's not always that way, right? But we all know that parallel at least. Like, so, oh, they had to hit rock bottom. Well, they had to get to the end of their desire and see what it had created for them and then decide or to either continue or not. And we all have that free will and we all have these desires and we all have this like hopefully ascending consciousness where we're more and more aware of ourselves, what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what we're desiring, what we're doing and why we're doing it. But not everybody is there yet.
No. God, no. It's tough. I'm not trying to, you know, convince anybody to get on board with my way of thinking on the world that's out there. I am of the belief that I don't even know what I don't know. You know, I'm at that stage where it's like, you think, you know, and you've had some experiences, and I've had some experiences. I haven't gone to the place where you've gone. I would feel differently about the world if I'd had that experience. Some people I don't think are ready for those experiences, and maybe they're, what sort of take do you have on reincarnation, when people have these experiences where they're like, you know, let's ask this 3-year-old about, you know, something. And they're like, I was a squadron leader in World War II and we were bombing the Japs. And you're like, how does this 3-year-old boy know all this stuff? Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but every now and then you get this situation where there's some kid who's like really young and is saying things that maybe they have no reason of knowing. And you start to ask questions like, are you dragging information from maybe a previous experience into this new life that you're living? And I'm curious, is that a thing?
Again, in my experience, and I'm like you, I'm not trying to convince anyone. I don't care. I've had someone ask me once, like, well, how are you going to prove to people that these things you say are true? And I'm like, I don't have any interest in proving anything to anyone. I don't care what people think. Like, I just, I know what I've experienced and I know how I feel about it now. And that honestly is the only thing that matters to me. And I love to share it with people who are curious and, you know, they get something out of that. But yeah, these things, you know, and I'd say there's more than we know. So there's tons of documentation on these kids who know things they can't know, especially over in the Eastern traditions on kids who were foretold, right? They were like, I will come back and I'll be born in this place and you'll know me because I'll remember this and this and this object. And they'll go to this place at this time. And here's these kids who were all born there. And they're like, here's 500 objects. Pick the 3 that are yours. And only one kid will go exactly to those 3 and no others and be like, here, I'm back. I'm back. Like,
I'm back, baby.
Yeah. Like, this blows our minds, right? But there's also kids, like people I know, who their parents will say to me, like, oh yeah, when he was young, when he was like 1 and 2, he was talking about being a cowboy and living in da-da-da. And I'm like, you know, so there's ones that we haven't documented too that are like, seem to be these memories of past lives. And I don't seem to have talked about that when I was a child. But I started having past life recollections when, again, around that same time that I had that journey out of body to the center of all things and back again and chose a new timeline. I started shortly thereafter remembering past lives. And now I don't even know how many. I think I'm at like 11 lives that I've now remembered that I've had. And that I thought was like, wow, that's insane. Well, now I've met people who say they remember every single incarnation. And unlike me, they remember all of it. They have all of their memories intact from every life. Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know how you'd contain that. When I remember a past life, it's like I re-experience the most traumatic and horrible part of it as though I'm that person again. And then I kind of come back to my consciousness here and now and re-experience myself as me. And at the very beginning, going into the experience, I'll remember like I'm Lindsay. And then once I'm in it, I don't remember Lindsay. I'm just this other person. Ooh. I'm experiencing it first person. I'm seeing, and I have all my memories of that life for those moments. And I understand everything that's happening perfectly. And usually I then die in that life. And then I leave. And as I'm leaving, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm Lindsay. You know, like for that space of time, I am that person. So when I say I remember it, I mean like I remember doing it and being it. And once I'm gone, the details of their life become fuzzier. Like all the things that made sense in the moment are sort of gone again.
Yeah.
But I still have the memory of what happened. And like I said, it's almost always traumatic. The very first one that I had was a full immersion into this life. My name was Elizabeth, it seemed, and I had dark long hair and it was Western time period, and I was brushing my hair in the mirror and I was terrified. And I was like, why am I so terrified? Like when I first started like into this memory, and I'm looking at myself in the mirror. So it was weird. That was the moment where I went from like remembering I'm Lindsay to looking at myself in the mirror and being like, I'm like Elizabeth or whatever, right? Like having this totally different view. And the reason I'm terrified, I realize, is because my husband is pissed off because he's realized that I've been, I don't remember if I was actually cheating on him or it was like an affair of the heart, but it was inappropriate, whatever it was. And it hurt his pride. And he was also like, how dare you? I'm better than you. Like in society, like you need me. And like, you know, this is how you're going to treat me. And and then he cut my throat with a straight razor. And I felt it, and I experienced falling to the ground and bleeding out.
oh my God.
Oh yeah. And it's that traumatic that when I came back, I was like emotional and I was like grabbing my throat because I thought maybe I'm bleeding. Like it was fully experiencing this. Yeah. And so again, I have this experience that like, who do you tell? No one. Because they're like, what? You're crazy. Right. Or like, what? Yeah. What's wrong with you? And also, what do you do with all that trauma? I was just like traumatized all over again because I died in the trauma and I apparently never resolved it. And then in this current life, so many things suddenly made sense to me. The more I sat with this and was, again, at the same sort of thing, I was like, is that real? Or did I just go insane for a minute? Or like, what just happened to me? I didn't know about past lives. I didn't know what this even could have been. And then it slowly sort of started to piece together, make sense to me. Like these are, some people have other lives and this was a life that I had. And then I started thinking like, this is so weird because I always had this severe like neck issue. So like anyone in my life would, if they'd come towards my neck, I would like unconsciously like battle them, like don't touch my neck. And I was always like, why? Nothing happened to my neck ever in this life, right? Like there's no reason for this insane fear of people touching my neck. Yeah. And then I had that experience and I was like, I get it now. I'm protecting my neck because he just came out of nowhere and did this and I was not expecting it. So that made sense. Some other things made sense. Eventually I realized who that person was in this current life. And then our relationship made more sense. You know, all of these things, I was just like, whoa, I couldn't have made this up if I tried.
Is it like the actor group that does like Best in Show, all those people like Christopher Guest and all those, and then they go do another movie, like A Mighty Wind,
right,
where it's the same people. So is that how it is? Is it like everybody's playing different roles in your first life and then they all are recast in this current life?
And maybe not all, but like a lot of times it sort of seems like the people we have something left to solve. Like we have something left to heal or solve or resolve or let go of. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we stop incarnating together. Right. But there's many people now that I've realized are in my life that I'm very close with that I've had multiple lives with or had multiple encounters with over many lives. So there's no accidents here. There's no right. The mother you chose, the father you chose, like the best friend you had, like they're all there for a reason. And you usually have some karma to work out together.
Interesting. I would like to make a movie recommendation for everybody out there. Have you seen, or you should go watch the movie Defending Your Life, written by Albert Brooks. It is hysterical. It's a comedy about being in purgatory and you're in this place that's, you've died and they take you into it. You're all sort of, everyone's kind of half unconscious. It's sort of like dazed and they bring you in on these like trams that are like the Disneyland trams, you know, like the whole thing is like, and you have to go through and defend your life. You basically have like a court date set and you have a prosecutor who's coming to tell you how you failed in this life. And you have a public defender who's going to like say, oh no, this person was great. And you have to look at certain scenes from your life and the prosecutor and the defending attorney kind of work out this process where they put you on trial. And one of the things, and it's a long process and it takes a couple days. So you're basically in this, this purgatory place for like a week, but it's set up like a hotel and everyone's wearing the same outfits. And like, they're like a phone call from the front desk. There's a message for you. And one of the places that you can go when you're not on this trial is the Past Lives Pavilion. And there's a place and you basically just, it looks like a shooting range, right? You go into these little like booths and then you're looking at a screen that's down there and you put your hand on this thing and it shows you like a past life. And there's a girl, like there's like a guy who's got his hand on it and it shows like him as in a past life as like a little girl brushing his hair. And you hear this like, Elizabeth, and she's like, come in, mommy. And the guy's like, what the hell is this? You know, he's like, watch it. And Albert Brooks's character, he puts his hand on there. And the picture that shows is like a black African tribesman running from like getting eaten by a tiger. He's like, and like the lady's like, what is your past life? He's like, I think I'm lunch, you know? And so they did like a comedic take on that, but it's all in there. It's actually a really great movie with an amazing message buried in a comedy, you know.
We need comedy.
Meryl Streep and Albert Brooks, and it is, and Rip Torn steals the show in it as the defense attorney. So anyway,
we need it because it's otherwise like a little bit heavy. People are like, whoa. So like all my mistakes are just piling up, and it's like, actually, it's not as bad as that. Like most of your mistakes, you kind of move through in the life itself. Like you're not just piling up. And even if you are, you can come to a moment of realization that we've talked about a few of them today, like where you're like, wait, what am I doing? Well, maybe I need to switch my life around. And those mistakes are now all transformed, right? Like it doesn't have to take lifetimes and lifetimes to do something. But like I said earlier, like your desires are your desires and they don't change until you change them. So for example, the person who cut my throat had to come back in this life, be very close to me, love me deeply, want to love me more, not be able to, and not kill me for it. Right?
Yes.
So if you had to confront like the same exact energy and make a different choice, but because you chose to, no one made them do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so they chose to come back and experience it again, but do it in a different way. And I chose to come back and let them have that experience and do it in a different way and trust each other enough to like not kill each other this time. And
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so I feel like that's such an elegant and beautiful way to teach yourself as a soul exactly who and what you are and know it. No one else could tell you, but now you know.
Yeah. The moral of the story in defending your life was that the people that went through life showing a lot of fear, they had to go back. They had to go back and live it again. Huh. And the people that were fearless, they were able to go on to the next. And what they showed in this, you know, sat in the movie theater and like in this courtroom, they would play scenes from your life. They would pick certain scenes and the prosecutor would show the scenes in which you were showing fear.
Yeah.
And the defense would show scenes in which you were rising above the fear.
Isn't that true?
Yeah. And so it's a good lesson in that regard of like, okay, if you're here for some experience, you know, to the extent that you can, try to not be scared about this stuff.
Right. Like,
jump in there and get,
which is hard. I talk about this to a lot of the people I work with too. It's like, well, how can you just stop fearing something you fear? Right. You can't just lie yourself out of, again, like a desire or a true feeling. You can't just be like, nope, I don't feel that way. Like, that's not true. Like, you are afraid. But what you can do is like notice the fear. And the more you notice it and sit with it and say, yeah, I'm afraid, but I don't actually have to be. And in fact, I can choose to look at it this other way. And you can start to sort of shift your fear away from where it's at, right? And you don't lie to yourself through it. You just say like, well, okay, that's terrifying to me. And also, what if I am an eternal soul? Or what if I have like all of the support I need actually? Or what if all I have to do is ask? Or what if I just go somewhere else? I'm not doing this thing that terrifies me anymore.
Right.
Right. Like there's some way to solve every fear you have without just sort of like pretending you can force it away or pretending you can just stop doing it.
Yeah.
Because usually you can't. It's a habit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think we're prepared for, as a society, I don't think they prepare us for the process of death very well here in America.
Oh, they do the opposite. They're like, let's make sure you have no idea about spirituality or your soul or the truth of anything beyond physical reality. Mm-hmm. And let's terrify you your whole life with scarcity and like, right? Let's just disconnect you as much as we can from anything that would be helpful for you. How about that?
Yeah. Instead of teaching you how to, you know, lubricate your soul so that it can more easily slide in and out of this body that you've got and go into the next one. And maybe, if they were to teach you that, maybe they couldn't collect enough money at the right. Religious institutions to finance a preacher's got to have a new car. You know what I mean?
And all the products and all the government laws. Like, why would you follow the laws of a government if you knew for sure your soul is eternal and you understand the true natural law of the universe? Like,
right.
That would no longer matter to you, right?
Yeah.
It would not be enough, at least, to scare you into submission, which is part of why, you know, when this whole COVID thing happened and all the lockdowns were happening, like the first episode I did in response to it was called "You're Not Dead Yet." I'm not dead yet, right? Like, stop being afraid of this bullshit. Who cares? Even if a nuclear bomb dropped tomorrow, what were you going to do about it? Nothing. Just keep living your life. Like, don't let them scare you into giving up everything of value to you because of what? Because of something that's already going to happen for sure, your death? Oh, don't let them take that and use it against you, right? If they have that, they can make you buy anything. They can make you submit to anything. Like, but if you know that you have this soul, if you know that you are this thing, and if you know that that's the ultimate reality, not this, that changes everything. So of course they don't want you to know it. And of course, if you do start to know it, they want to trap you into a religion, a controlled, nice little environment where you're actually still terrified all the time.
Sure. Oh, maybe even more so. I mean, God's watching you at all times. And if you do one thing wrong, they're going to come. It's going to lightning bolts and all that stuff. I mean, that's one way to control people, I suppose. I think it's a real kind of like low energy way of doing it, by fear and, you know, scaring some kid into the unknown. But I never connected with that. I remember my mom taking me to church when I was young, when I was little, and I think she quit after the second time because she was like, "You don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. This isn't working for us." And so I was like, "Yeah, this isn't my jam." And it's fine for everybody. I mean, whoever's into it, if it's their jam, that's cool. I'm not saying it's not a good jam. It's just not mine. It's just, I never connected with organized religion in that regard. I mean, I'm interested to know how it all works, but I don't think that some guy in a dress up there standing in front of everybody's got the answers. That guy doesn't have the answers.
The answers any more than you can create for yourself.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And that's like my whole thing. So I do all this work with people, and I do tarot, and I do past life stuff, and I do whatever healings. But my real goal all along is to get people to develop their own internal compass and trust that above anything else. Because in the end, I'm just another person in your life that's telling you something that may or may not feel like the exact version of the truth for you. And so you, again, coming to that knowing yourself is like the most valuable thing that anybody can have. And I hope, I always tell people this. I'm like, my hope is that someday you won't want me or need me, right? Like, that'd be great. No offense. I'm here for you, like, whatever. But also, that would be great. I hope everybody gets to that point.
Yeah. Let's wrap up with this. What, if somebody does want to come and talk to you, how do they do it? What are the sorts of options? What are the sorts of programs or sessions that you do that can help people? Maybe there's someone out there that's hearing this and really kind of going, nodding along in agreement and going, yes, I'm interested in this. I want to talk to somebody about this. How do they do that with you?
Yeah. Rogueways.org is my site. And on rogueways.org, there's a little tab. It says schedule a session, and you can click on that and you can see everything that I offer. And so I mostly do, again, sort of past life tarot readings, life path tarot readings. So whether you want to look at a life you've had previously or this current life, they both actually tend to have the same amount of sort of like healing effect on a person. Because just even reconnecting with some of the traumatic patterns of another life and some of the gifts and challenges that have come through into this current life from those lives, that can be so healing in itself to just be like, oh, I understand myself a little bit better. I understand where I'm coming from and therefore also where I'm going. And the life path reading is similar too. It's like a giant reflecting pool, right? Where you get to look into it and really just see yourself in greater detail. That's the beauty of any sort of healing anyway, is that you come away with a deeper understanding of yourself. And again, that connection that you have to whatever you want to call it, I don't care. I'm not attached to words, but like source, God, the eternal field of love in the universe, it doesn't matter, whatever you want to call the thing that is for you, eternal and omnipresent, and a stronger connection to that understanding of that, again, is the goal. But I also do spiritual guidance sessions in which we go in and do some communication with your spiritual guides and allies and get messages through from them. Some healing comes through. Again, I'm not in charge of the healing energy. It's just as what happens when people come together. You know, they got that part right when they were talking about Jesus, whoever he was or wasn't, whether he existed or not. When he said, when two or more people gather in my name, there I am. It's just like another way of saying where two or more people come together for a stated purpose. Like, that is the intention. That's what's going to come through. So healing just does come through. I've had people heal physically. I've had people heal emotionally and mentally more often, but miraculous seeming things seem to happen for people. And again, it doesn't even have anything to do with me. It's just us coming together and creating this intention and then opening up to the possibility of the higher nature of your soul that it is not this material thing, right? And so I have all of that. I also just talk to people, do coaching and talk sessions, and those can be about anything, you know, physical health, mental health, emotional health, spiritual stuff. Lots of people want to just come and be like, look, here's what happened to me. Like, am I crazy? What does it mean? And like, that's really helpful because like I was alone 100%. In a lot of this, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't have anyone. So like that's really valuable. And that's something that I do. And all of that, whatever it is that is drawing people, they can find on rogueways.org.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking about this stuff. You know, it's a turbulent time in my life, but I've been through this rodeo in the past, similar things. So I'm just coming at this from a place of deep appreciation for everything that I've had and continue to have in terms of like the time with my mother, and fully, you know, recognize that this is part of my process. I got to go through this and she's got to go through it. And,
you know, what'd be interesting?
What's that?
If you guys want to talk about it, maybe you already have, but like, hey, when you go, here's how you can communicate with me. Show me this like animal or this number or this sign or do this thing. Did you guys already talk about that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Cause then you, again, then, you know, like I know people who I love who have passed have come back, but like when you can know yourself, mm-hmm. nothing can undo that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm dreading it, but I'm appreciative for the experience of going through it, and I got to feel everything I got to have to feel about this.
Yeah.
Happiness, sadness, you know, all that stuff. And then use it as, you know, as a power source moving forward and just kind of, you know, as the, you know, the Obi-Wan Kenobi in the back of my mind, you know, sort of exactly. telling me like, don't, and I always sort of had her voice in my head anyway, saying, don't get in a car with somebody who's been drinking or the things like that. You know what I mean? So you kind of always have that in the back of your, not in a psychosis sort of way,
no.
where you're hearing voices, but in a nice sort of like your mother's telling you, like, if she said it so many times, you can almost hear it in your head. So I'm appreciative for everything that I've gone through and will, and the time that I have left with her. And so I think we've got the right attitude about it. We've been watching funny TV shows and eating ice cream at night. You know what I mean? So
I love it. You guys are so wise. It's so impressive. And it's true. Even if you know the ultimate reality, it still doesn't change the loss of the physical presence and the grief that is going to come with that. It's intelligent to know that that's true, but that also there's joy and gratitude and they're not fake. They're powerful too. So it's pretty cool.
It's a pretty heavy episode, everybody. I hope you guys are ready for it. People are driving their car. They're like, oh,
sorry, I said it.
Sorry, everybody. I'm not trying to bum you out. I'm actually trying to come at this from as just as honest of a place as I can. It's not the greatest scenario, but you know, I know people that have it much worse than me. I'm in no position to complain, really. But you're the best. I'll catch you. You know, we'll catch each other on Sunday. That's Lindsay Sharman, everybody. You can go to rogueways.org and check out everything that she's doing. Support her work. If you're somebody that wants to book a session with her, see if you can get on her calendar. It'd probably be a good thing for you. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website. It's the best place to do it. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.
Emoji moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ameth, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com. Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio. Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.